You're listening to the OneOfUs.net Podcast Network.
One of Us is a podcast and video network funded all but entirely by donations and subscriptions. We do accept pitches for audio-based or banner ads, but on a case-by-case basis. If you're interested in that, contact us at oneofusnet@gmail.com. With the amount of audio and video content we generate, it is expensive and extremely time-consuming to keep things running. Please go to the webpage oneofus.net and sign up for a subscription at $2, $5, $10, or $25 and get a ton of bonus content. One of Us needs and appreciates all your support.
Man, I know Adam McKay movies tend to be a little, you know, divisive, but Jesus Christ, I did not think that Don't Look Up, the most broad comedy film he's made since his Will Ferrell days, was going to be the one that would have critics and audiences just like, oh, we must battle now.
It tis the season. If you're going to pick a metaphor, it's kind of funny. He's just like, hey, everybody needs to calm down. It's like, you know what you were doing.
The divisiveness is so insane with this one. You just thought he made Mother. It's like, I can't find like two people that are on the same side about this.
I think people who are like, it's terrible, are like really thinking too hard about this and overanalyzing it. And people who are like, it's the funniest film of the year, are really thinking too hard about this and maybe overanalyzing it. I think it's lays somewhere in the middle. And I'm okay with that. I think that's actually kind of what he wanted, but nobody's probably more thrilled than Adam McKay that, hey, at least people are talking about it.
I think that people are like, we're so sick of talking about the actual reality that we're living in that they're almost diffusing into like, well, here's a way I can talk about it, but I'm not actually talking about real life.
It's a fun way to talk about climate change, which this movie is about climate change.
Yeah. Is there any other, I mean, maybe Happy Feet is the only other fun way of talking about climate change? I don't know.
That was less like wearing its emotions on its sleeve.
It's certainly a metaphor for climate change. At its heart, I think what it's really about is like, here's how you're being manipulated by rich people.
Or just culture in general, to be clear. It definitely targets all over the place, which is probably why on some level pisses some people off, because they're like, oh, that's funny, I agree. Hey, wait a minute. I heard a lot of that.
A lot of people are saying the word scattershot, and, you know, I mean, there's an element of truth.
I think that's accurate, but I think very intentional, too, because I don't think you can look at this bigger problem that it's addressing and go, well, it's just their fault.
Right. If there was one solution to this problem, there wouldn't be a problem.
I do appreciate that nobody is spared in this movie.
This came out on Netflix just recently. I got to see this a couple of weeks ago, and I was really like, oh, God damn it, I hope I can remember it all. And I had no problem because it is very broad and kind of in your face. But joining me, for people who just got to see this more recently, are Bo.
Hello.
Elliot.
Hey, hey.
And Frank, you saw this with me a while ago too, though, right?
No, I didn't see it.
So I just saw it.
And I can't wait to nominate it for a bunch of stuff. I'm just kidding. I'm not going to nominate this for shit.
You already know where Frank lays on this one. Anyway, Jennifer Lawrence plays Kate. She is a Michigan State University doctoral candidate who is working in a telescope, basically, taking notes. She's doing what you've seen in a billion Aliens Are Showing Up movies, or Armageddon, the guy's sitting there and it's like 3 a.m. and they're like listening to music and chewing gum and shit and like, all right, taking the notes on the thing. Holy shit, what is that?
All of a sudden an alien sticks his junk in the camera and we're off to the races.
Well, it's not an alien, but it is a foreign object. Object from outer space. Stop it. It's a huge meteorite slash comet that, with their calculations and with the help of Dr. Randall, Leonardo DiCaprio, who is sort of like the boss of this department, and the rest of the team, they calculate like, oh, we are 100% certain that this comet is going to impact the Earth in about 6 months. It's big enough and fast enough that it's going to cause the extinction of all life on the planet Earth.
Can we just call it 70% though?
But it's not 100%, Chris.
99.0 something.
86%. You know, which we could round down to 70.
So minuscule of a difference as to be not worthy of consideration, basically. They're like, what do we do? And I mean, really, this is not something either one of them expected to have to deal with at some point in their relatively early careers. So, I guess we're going to have to call our boss, and they call their boss, and their boss, Rob Morgan, goes, all right, right, I guess I'll come with you, and we're going to have to talk to the White House.
I mean, he's not even their boss. He runs an organization that is kind of loosely tied into NASA that is basically in charge of this shit. It's like, you know, planetary defense. And I kind of liked this about the movie, where it's just like, generally in movies that you were kind of talking about, you know, Armageddon things, it's just like, get on the red phone and call so-and-so. And this is like, who do we call the White House? Or is it NASA? The Pentagon?
NASA takes him to the White House, where they meet the president, played by Meryl Streep, Jenny Orlean, and her assistant slash son, the chief of staff, Jason, played by Jonah Hill, who are, to put it in a word, totally absurd. This is like somewhere between the president in Idiocracy and Donald Trump, which I realize there's not all that much difference anyway, except one was in good shape and the other, well, round as a shape.
He is a shape.
I was going to say Sarah Palin and Donald Trump.
They kind of like are like, well, you know, there's some other stuff going on with to deal with right now. They're just not taking it seriously. Like, oh, you science smart types. Like, this is ridiculous. We're talking about the end of all life on Earth on 6 months, and she's worried about our polling numbers. So they're like, well, fuck them.
They are admittedly dealing with trying to get a new Supreme Court candidate in who the president has ties to, and it's a big scandal is about to erupt, and they're just like, we're on damage control mode here.
Which, again, not even close to as important as a comet that's going to destroy the Earth in 6 months by any calculation. They're like, okay, well, we're going to have to go to the media. I know they told us not to, but fuck that. We're going to the media. With a show that's hosted by Cate Blanchett, playing Bree Evan-Tee, and Tyler Perry, Jack Bremer, on the show called The Daily Rip, which is like this insanely popular, very sort of internet-y feeling, like TMZ-ish almost, like gotcha show. Who also, they get on there and they're like, no, seriously. And Jennifer Lawrence kind of loses her shit, and they're like, ugh, nobody likes a shrill woman screaming about the end of the world. And then everyone looks at Leo DiCaprio and go, you are a pretty good looking scientist, aren't you? Who's trying to be chill. So the way their public perception goes and their involvement in this whole situation ends up taking two very different directions, as he kind of, despite his consternation at people's reaction to this, starts becoming sort of the face of this being a reality as more and more acceptance goes on. This is actually going to happen unless we do something about it. And she becomes more and more sort of the face of the thing people point at when they're like going, ah, bullshit. And, you know, is not asked to be on camera. Don't Look Up is definitely pointing its fingers all over the place, as we said. There's a lot of different people who appear in this film along the way, like Mark Rylance, Timothée Chalamet, Ron Perlman, Ariana Grande, Melanie Lynskey, Michael Chiklis, Chris Evans, Liev Schreiber. Lots and lots of people are in this thing. Some just in cameos, more or less playing themselves. But nonetheless, this is sort of a modern day Idiocracy, but the main difference being Idiocracy seemed absurd. Like, okay, it's not going to be that bad, but it turned out to be super prescient. And this is like, well, it currently is that bad. So it's like, as much as it's trying to be ridiculously funny, there's a point for me, at least, that it just kind of turned to, I'm just depressed and angry. Yeah. And I'm like chuckling every once in a while. Like, I'm guffawing for the first act of this movie. But there's a point where I'm just like, this is just too sad because of how real it is.
The first hour of this is solid laughs, and they work. And I never say that about Adam McKay. At least I haven't said that about him in a while. But then after the first hour, you think, oh, fuck, there's an hour and a half left. And then after that, you're like, oh, okay, yeah, I'm laughing at this. It's actually happening right all around us. I love the Norman Lear school of comedy where every time you laugh at something that's really, really scary or really, really evil, you break down its defenses in a lot of ways and it becomes less scary for you. But I'm not so sure that method worked as well here, because I still found this really depressing and really scary in the midst of all the laughter. So I don't really think that its aim was achieved in that way. It didn't make me feel any better about what's happening.
I think this movie was ultimately very nihilistic. Well, there's two post-credits scene, but sort of the main one is really quite dark.
That was a good laugh, though.
Yeah, it was another good laugh.
I think they're counting on the absurdity being so high that you're still laughing, but the problem is, I think by that point, for a lot of us, we're like, this just seems all too plausible.
Yeah, yes. Oh, yeah, I know, yeah. Wikipedia describes this as a science fiction. I was, you know, very little fiction here. No, nothing that happens in this movie is implausible at all. I did want something uplifting from the movie, or some sort of not a complete descent into nihilism.
Yeah, or cynical. This movie is like so cynical every turn it gets. It would have been nice to have like some little glimmer of hope somewhere, even if it's just blown away a few minutes later.
I don't think I had a problem with that per se. I think I just had a problem enjoying it in the way it was intended because of it. I mean, this is aiming at Doctor Strangelove. It doesn't hit that mark because it's not as smart or well shot as Doctor Strangelove is. But it's also a film made in a different time that expressly is going to use a different style. This lots of good editing, but it's choppy and fast moving, much like our world is as we view it through a media lens. And I think that's the appropriate way to do it for sure. There's just a point where I genuinely left the theater just feeling downtrodden and terrible because it just, I think enough every day about all this shit without having this film confront me with it. But you know what? If it makes some people out there who are on the fence think a little more because they laughed, you know, like Dr. Spock said, you can teach a kid anything if you can make them laugh.
Or doubt. I know some doubters, some climate change deniers. Yeah, idiots. Yeah, I think this is squarely for them, but they might just laugh this off completely. It just will totally wash over their heads. Who knows?
Let's be clear here. Nobody whose opinion this movie wants to change is going to see it, much less appreciate it. And just because I think it should be mentioned, the obvious metaphor here is climate change, is this event that may be and probably will be an apocalypse that is going to incredibly affect the human race. The movie really shifts in tone when one character, the actor of which we've mentioned here, but I'm not going to give you any spoilers, figures out like, hey, maybe we can make some fucking money off of this. I think that's where most people are starting to go like, oh yeah, that's horribly realistic and not funny at fucking all. Mm-hmm. And from then on, it becomes like, oh shit. Because the first half of the movie almost does have a certain amount of absurdism because you're like, dudes, there's a literal fucking comet heading for us. Come on, you know, let's get real. You can literally, as the title tells us, look up and fucking see it. But when it becomes a like, oh, this is how this shit gets real, is when people are like, we should manipulate people in order to profit upon this apocalyptic event, that you're like, oh, this isn't absurdist anymore. This is just pretty much laying it on the fucking line.
And I don't think it's enough to say climate change is their whole goal. It's also about COVID denial and the way that this has been politically used very recently and mm-hmm. still. I mean, when it gets to that point in the top of the third act where literally for the president, it is a running platform of don't look up. Our crowd is just that stupid. And that's the most cynical thing. These politicians are like, I know my followers are stupid and will listen to me when I tell them, don't look at this thing that is right in front of you. And they'll do it and they'll yell even louder than me about it. And that's to the point where you're like, how did we get here? And the film is not trying to analyze that. It's just buffooning it.
When I was watching this, friend of mine messaged me saying, hey, I'm about to watch this. What do you think? And I said, well, either Adam McKay is a sadist or we really did something to piss him off, because like it was excruciating. And I think that there is that tonal shift that happens when it goes from absurdist humor to satire. But it goes into hardcore satire, like in all caps, like he memorized the definition and just told the cast to play that over and over again. The further this went on, just the more hopeless and in despair I felt. And it was just Christmas, man. I mean, gosh.
Not a feel-good holiday film, to be sure. I wanted to feel better, so I watched Silent Night, Deadly Night afterwards.
I watched The Last Duel again or something, you know, after this.
Jesus Christ, this movie is spoiling the end of Dune.
Well, let's go to final thoughts. Elliot, why don't you get us started?
Yeah, I think I pretty much agree with a lot of what's been said. I think this movie is kind of the definition of its reach exceeded its grasp, I think. It's really trying to do Strangelove. It falls quite short of that. I think it's far too cynical for its own subject matter. There's a lot to like here, though. I mean, this is pretty much a greatest hits of Hollywood cast. Chalamet, he's done at least two great performances this year in French Dispatch and Dune, and this was another kind of knocking it out of the park role for him. He was just so great in a role that was just kind of a throwaway role. You know, I think this movie needed to be a little bit more concise. It's very scattershot. It's poking fingers at everyone, which is great, and I think you can still do that while having a bit better aim, which comes along with not being as cynical. This movie is not going to change any minds. I don't know that there's a movie that could change minds at this point that isn't just a documentary, but unfortunately we got An Inconvenient Truth over a decade ago. I'm gonna give this about 6 out of 10 family dinners at the end of the world.
Frank?
Yeah, I agree with a lot of what Elliot said. The performances are really, really split, actually by like 60-40 for me. I think that Leonardo DiCaprio, Jennifer Lawrence, and Meryl Streep are all nailing their roles, and they're all getting laughs. They're getting solid laughs, but that's more due to line delivery and their improvisations. You know, when Meryl Streep has a scene when she's told how she's going to die, and she does like, oh, and I mean, it's just like one of the biggest laughs she got from me in the movie. Jennifer Lawrence has great facial expressions when she's talking to Ariana Grande, and Leonardo DiCaprio, I would never thought that I would buy Leonardo DiCaprio as a middle-aged scientist, and he's fit so naturally into that role.
Dude, he invented dad bod, Frank. Come on.
Well, Zac Efron apparently has a dad bod now, and it is better than mine because he's still fucking hot because he's fucking Zac Efron. But
stay focused, Frank. Stay focused.
On the flip side, you got Cate Blanchett, Mark Rylance, Timothy Chalamet, all of them are making some choices. I think the problem is that these people don't read as people. They come across as caricatures, and they just become more and more of a caricature, each one of them, with every subsequent scene. And at the end of the film, they become just virtually unplayable. And I think all these actors struggle, especially Rylance. I think that is the worst character of his career. That is not even a human being. I'm convinced that's an android.
That was directly out of Ready Player One.
He makes the guy in Ready Player One look like the Fonz. I mean, seriously, it was crazy.
Okay, apparently I'm the only person who saw Jobs.
You were, because I watched Steve Jobs, and that was the better one.
That was definitely the better one.
No, this one made me really depressed and more hopeless about the situation that we're in than I already was before. It is the best thing Adam McKay has done in a while, but to quote Lisa Lampanelli, that is like being the prettiest one on The View. It doesn't mean much. So I am going to give this 6 out of 10 animals that'll just eat you up if you try to pet them.
Bo?
Adam McKay went back into his lair after The Big Short, and he's like, all right, I did this film explaining this very esoteric market process by which we had the 2008 economic collapse, and maybe people didn't buy it as much as he wanted, because this is something that he's approaching that is absolutely broader, and he decides to play it broader. I think this film way more wants to be Dr. Strangelove than it ever wants to be Idiocracy. In the first half, when it's just dealing with, hey, people are stupid and the media's kind of a slog to get through, but maybe we'll be okay. And then when we get to the point that it's like, nope, there's money involved, and so we're all going to die. Yeah, we take a specific downturn. And it's not because I don't agree that everybody is. There are people in here who aren't really like giving, and that McKay isn't doing his best to make a good work. But yeah, it's like when you get to the point where it's just like, and then I pretty much decided that we're all fucked. It's kind of hard to jump on board, not to make a spoiler out of it, but you know, it's a small boat and not everybody is going to be able to get on it. So that definitely affected the enjoyability of it for me. It maybe should have been trimmed down, but dealing with the topic, maybe not. I had some very mixed feelings about this, so I'm definitely going to give it 6.5 out of 10 hungry Brontorocks.
Oh, that's what they were called, right, yeah.
So, Frank, I guess you're not an Adam McKay fan at all from what you were saying?
I'm not an Adam McKay fan.
I think he's incredibly talented. I think he's a great writer and a great director. I, in fact, like less his goofy pre-Big Short stuff that everybody else likes than I do his post. I've liked everything he's done post then, including this. And I know people love to shit on Vice. I thought Vice was great. I'm still baffled why people hate it so much. And I'm baffled to some degree by the hate for this. Like, really? Hatred? And I'm seeing it from right-wingers. Go, whatever. I'd expect that. They're shitting on you. But I see people who are really left-wing who are like, oh, it's just so arrogant talking down. I'm like, look around
you. But I think
you.
That's the problem, is that there's not enough distance. I think The Big Short works because there was distance between us and the subject matter. And those two, there's none, really.
I mean specifically the anger towards this one. The performances are fine considering it's supposed to be cartoonish and absurd. So they're playing cartoonish, absurd characters. Nobody's doing a bad acting job or misconceived one. It's exactly what the picture is. I mean, this is basically a comic strip. If this had been made in 1985, it would have started with MTV's Don't Look Up. It's that type of like ridiculousness level to it. But he really wants to say something, and there's some genuinely smart stuff in here, like really smart stuff and really funny, like hold your stomach laughing humor at it points. But yeah, it just starts to fade after a while as your like angst and depression starts overwhelming any humor you might be getting out of it as you go. Despite that absurdity, it's just too real and now, and I'm having trouble laughing at us in the middle of doom. Like watching it, the world on fire around me, sitting there like the dog with a cup of coffee going, oh, this is funny.
This is fine.
Yes, I know. I changed it, Bo. Thank you.
That doesn't make any sense. It's a dog.
Oh, my God. Anyway, don't look up. I think you should look it up on Netflix. Give it a chance, because there's a chance that this is going to be totally your type of movie. And remember, when Idiocracy came out, a lot of people just hated it and called it, like, arrogant. They're saying exactly the same shit about it that they're saying about this now. And while I still think that is also very scattershot and a wildly imperfect comedy, it's also really funny at points, and the same can be said of Don't Look Up. I think this is a movie people will still be referencing back to decades from now. It's, you know...
What? Oh, Chris, we're not going to be around decades from now.
Those who are still here.
Those of us who make it onto the spaceship or ends up realizing that apes are actually here on Earth.
The wasteland survivors.
Meryl Streep will lean over to you, because Meryl Streep will be on the spaceship that will go to the next planet. But she'll lean over and go like, hey, you want to see a knee slapper?
Anyway, I did enjoy this more than I didn't, but I still think it's pretty imperfect. I'm going to give it 7 out of 10 totally missed opportunities. I kept waiting for it. I was like... There's gonna be a scene, right, where she gets on a Zoom call with, like, Ben Affleck and Bruce Willis, and everybody is, like, the cast of Armageddon. It's like, we need you guys to pilot the ship. Just have them go, yeah, no, you're crazy, lady, go away. That would have been perfect.
Now, you should also watch Don't Look Now, though, which is a really also a really good film, Chris.
That is a very good film. Thank you, Frank. Yes, that's... Any film with Don't Look starting off the title apparently is great. And Frank,
no, not all of them.